You listen to Green Tea with Kobe and Green, your Asian lifestyle podcast, straight from my living room to your listening device. Join the conversation on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Come on over for some green tea. We'll be serving it popping hot. Until next time, namaste. Hello and welcome to the second episode of Green Tea, the podcast. Yes, I know it's been a while since my last installment, but you know what? Life happens, and life has been happening, like, a lot. Anyway, how are you doing, my pillow doves, my green tea sippers? Great to be back for some much-needed air, for now. And boy, oh boy, trials and tribulations of being an adult. Yeah, it's been raining, pouring. I mean, like, cats and dogs in true Kardashian fashion, literally. Anyway, pardon my rambling in aid of some sort of digression from the real matter. I don't want to bore you with all the gory details of my life. Yeah, my sad little pathetic life. Yeah, that, got that right. Yes, yeah, sad. Pathetic. Anyway, on a much and well-deserved light note, I am a graduate again. Did it. Third time lucky. The charm, right? Yes. And I'm officially 33 years old. God, I've been alive for 33 volatile years. Been surviving. Good. Can you believe that? Me, 33 years old. Anyway, I'm Colvin Green and you're listening to the Green Tea Podcast. All the way from my living room to your listening device. I'm in Asia, of course, you know that by now. And then we disguise our lifestyles. Yeah, lifestyle, I think. Whatever. Anyway, we discuss that and anything pertaining us living here and you there. Sorry, I'm shading. But yeah, China life, Korean life, whatever, Vietnam, whatever. If you're in Asia, we want your story and we discuss everything and everything around all of that. So yeah, so last week I promised you I'd give you a tidbit, right? Like a treat, a podcast treat and all that. So I'm delivering, right? Well, here you go. I'm pouring the tea right now. It's searing hot. It's piping hot. She hails all the way from Sisiho in Limpopo province and currently working and living in Korea as an ESL teacher. Exciting, right? Not China. Korea. Do not get it twisted. China. Korea. All right? Korea, a different country. China, a different country. You got that, right? Anyway, green tea sippers, ladies and gentlemen, Nikki Wimashele is on the line. Nikki, I'm going to try and get this right. I'm going to try and get this right. I practiced the whole morning. An Young Se Ha. I'm going to try and get this right. I seriously am trying, okay? Like, I'm not trying to butcher anybody's greeting and stuff, but it's so interesting, and I was so shocked how long it is. I mean, we have ni hao, and it's done. It's like a sentence, though. How do you say it right?
Okay, so, annyeonghaseyo is a form of greetings. So, between me and you, we just say annyeong.
Oh, annyeong.
And then annyeonghaseyo in a formal setup.
Okay, Anya. Okay, cool. All right. Well, there you go. Ni hao ma. That's us. Short and straight to the point. My God, that's complicated.
Yeah.
How's your Korean, by the way?
Korean. I'm learning a bit of Korean, so I can hear a bit of Korean, and I can speak a bit of it. So yeah, we get in there. We get in there.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, rather you than me. Yeah, I no, like, do not ask me about my Chinese. No. I mean, like, it's embarrassing, honestly. Like, yeah. Just sheer dumb embarrassment. I mean, been here all these years and I can barely hold a conversation. Really can't. I mean, I do pick up here and there. I do get around. I do say stuff, you know, if I need stuff like basic Chinese. You know, I do know colors. I do know numbers. I do know a few different food items and all that stationery. I mean, I do. I should know more, and I'm not making an excuse. It's inexcusable. I'm just dumb like that. Just dumb like that.
You know how to go by, right, in Chinese.
I mean, it's there, it's not there. It depends on the mood, really. Depends on the mood. There are some days, and I'd be talking, and I'm like, oh, actually, I know what this means. Because I think we're kind of programmed to think in a way that we don't really know how to speak the language. But then, you know, there are those days when you're having a good day and it just comes almost too natural, you know, and like, oh, I've got this. And then there are days where you kind of need to speak and it's just not there. Like how people act and they say, well, you know, like, English in school is this, but when I need to speak English, this happens, I'm blank.
Exactly.
It's that type of thing. So anyway, well, glad to have you here. I promised them a treat last week. I prepared for this. I mean, not as much as I should have prepared, though, but I did prepare. And they're excited. I mean, I told my regular listeners, you know, to actually tune in and when it's done, and then I'm going to put it out there. You also, I see that you also did a bit of a promo for me. Well, we actually appreciate you down here. We appreciate you down here for that.
We try to get more listeners.
Bruh, I mean, help a black child, please. You know, just help a black child out. Help a black child out. We do actually appreciate that. Well, shisheni, that's how we say it down here. Thank you so much. That's how it goes.
I think also I've been waiting so long to be part of this platform.
Exactly. Like, it's long overdue, right? Like, it's long overdue, actually. It's long overdue. I did actually tease and speak to Zandile about it. I was like, I should have Nigi on the podcast and stuff. And she was like, yeah, but I'd really be interested in hearing and all of that. Because, I mean, Zandile is like such a supporter. Shout out to Zandile. Zandile, my friend, listens like to every podcast I make. Everything that I put out, Zandile listens. And she sends proof. Oh. She sends receipts that I'm listening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is a shout out. Yeah.
It's recording. So I was like, no, don't worry. Once he uploads it, you will be the first one to know.
And, you know, we love stories. We love stories, yeah. Real and raw, unedited, unfiltered, unbridled stories. You know, we don't do all that glossy stuff. We like real stories up in here. So if you have a story, so yeah, just come on up. Anyway, all of that prattling. So let's just skip to it. You know, let's just get to it. So, Nigi, you and I met university, of course. We went to the same university, y'all. Where did we go to school? Tell them.
I studied in Zanin for my primary, and I studied in Seshefa for high school, and that's when we met at TUT, right? We did the same course. So, yeah, I studied at TUT. I did language practice.
Linguistics. Yeah, boring, right? Linguistics. Boring.
Yeah.
I mean, we had to leave home to come and find jobs, yeah. Shame! Shame. And yeah, we met, I think we met around, was it 2014? I think 2014. Did you go there before me? Did you go like, 2013 or 14?
I did my first year in 2013.
God, yeah.
So you came 2014, right? So it means you came a year after me.
I came a year after you. And then you were friends with, my homegirl, Uneli. I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how actually, yeah.
Yeah, that's how we met actually. And I remember how you used to tease me about how we people from Bushbuck Ridge, how we greet. What did you say that was again?
Do you really have to go there?
Oh, come on, jump.
Oh my God, I was like, what the hell is going on?
That has stayed with me all these years. And then so we did our diplomas and BTEC, and yeah, and then you moved, you made the move from South Africa to Korea, which of course was a detour. You wanted to be in China initially, right?
Yeah, I did.
And then what happened?
Actually, I started the whole process. Actually, I first heard about this. Zandi invited me to one of the WhatsApp groups, and the admin of the group is a guy called Musa, who's also vocal about these jobs on his Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
So Zandi invited that WhatsApp group, and they were just like sharing all this, you know, the requirements, what you have to do and all that. Then that's when I was like, okay, fine. I was part of the group, but for me, it kind of felt like a dream.
Yes.
You know, I felt like, like maybe I had to have like a huge sum of money, you know, and knowing that I didn't have anything at the time, I was still a student. So one of the things that I picked up from the group was that you had to have a degree.
Yes.
So at the time, my plan was, okay, graduate from TUT with your diploma, go to UNISA and get a PGCE and, you know, just do whatever you have to do.
Yes.
So after I was part of the group, I then found out that you need a degree in order for you to come and work in Asia. Then I was like, okay, then let me just go and register for a BTEC. Then I think later that year, he posted something on Facebook, because at the time we were not friends on Facebook. You posted something about you moving to China. And Zandile shared that post, and I was like, oh, really? So this is real. This is a real thing. I can actually do this because, you know, I was relating it to it. I was relating to it in a way that I know you personally. We did the same qualification. So if he did it, I can do it too. You know? True. So then I started doing research. I watched a lot of YouTube videos, you know. Then in 20, I had an interview with one of the agents in China, and then I did an interview. It was successful, but I was supposed to move in 2019 February, and I think that was when COVID hit us.
Yes, I remember.
I was supposed to move in, yeah. So that's when COVID hit us, and they were like, no, sorry, we have to pause everything due to this virus and so on. So then we paused, we went through COVID, the lockdowns and all that. I was so depressed, Cole, I don't want to lie. Because back in South Africa, I was not finding anything stable.
True.
And I was just finding contract jobs, 6 months, 3 months and all that. I was just tired, so I just wanted to go and find something stable for myself. So then after that, the same agency, when, you know, things were just starting to, you know, get better, like life was now getting a little bit normal.
Actually, Korea opened borders before China, right?
It did, yes. So the same agency is recruiting for Taiwan, China, and South Korea. So then the placement coordinator sent me an email. They're like, how about you try South Korea instead of China? Because, you know, things in China, they're still on standstill. Then I was like, oh, sure, that's not a bad idea after all. Then after that, I just like started looking up Korea. Then I fell in love with it. I was like, yeah, sure, let's go with South Korea.
And then you started applying for Korea.
I started applying for that. I did interviews and yeah.
Do you remember the first day you landed in Korea? On which day was it?
Yeah. I landed in Korea on the 21st of February,
2022. My God, wait, 2022? I mean, it seems like you've been there for 3 years already, hey? I mean, time flies, hey?
It's just been a year and I think 3 months.
Wow. Yeah.
So I landed in February 2022 and I had to come, you know, earlier because we had the 7 days quarantine.
Okay, wow. And then shortly after the quarantine, you processed your papers and then you now had to, I don't know, because I'll tell you how things go here and then you know, you make a comparison. Because when you get from South Africa and then you get to China and then, you know, at that time, you know, like currently, at that juncture, at that point, you already know where you're going, which school you're going to, and which city you're going to. But then we get to a city, and then some companies, they have, I think they act like agencies or something, and then they would hire you and then deploy you to a certain city or a certain school. And then you do like training for like a month or a few weeks, if you're lucky, and then you get deployed to a city. That's what happened with us. So we got here and then they processed our work permits and of course we did the health checkups and stuff for your visa, your residence permit and everything else. And then I think it took me like a month to 2 months basically to settle into a job. How was that for you in Korea?
Okay, so because I was using an agency, so I had an interview with them first initially before I had an interview with the school. So they just like, they work with the schools, right? So they know a school that has like an open space. Mm-hmm. So they gave me like, I think 4 schools and they're like, check them out and then tell us which one you'd like to have an interview with. So I had an interview with 2 of those schools and both interviews were successful. So they got back to me like, no, you passed your interview, then you have to pick one. You have to get back to us before 3 days. So then in Korea, we have something called the blacklist.
Yes.
So in that blacklist, that's where, you know, you get to find schools, you know, the blacklisted. Yeah, the workers that worked there before, they were not happy either with the employee or the setup of the school or whatever the issue is. So I checked for those schools and I didn't find any of them. Okay. And then I just picked randomly. So before I came to Korea, I knew the name of the school I was going to work for. I knew the city and I knew almost everything because they send it to you. They send it to you. This is the salary. This is the city where you're going to and all that.
Oh, wow. Wait, so I'm guessing Korea does things differently because in China, as I said before, you already know where you're going, you know, where you're going to work. That means you've done the interviews in South Africa. You interview back home, and then, you know, by the time you board that flight, you already know that you have a job secured. So I'm guessing in Korea it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
You get there and you still do interviews?
No, I did my interviews while I was back home.
So then when you got to Korea, you still had to do other interviews? Or was this after you decided to explore other options?
No, for the first school that I worked for, I did all the interviews while I was back home.
Oh, okay.
So when I was even in South Africa, I already knew the school that I was going to work for.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the interviews and the preparation while I was back home. So before you leave, like during the process where you have to apply for your visa, you know, they tell you like, okay, once you get to Incheon Airport, we have to take a bus to the city. When you get off, you take bus number, whatever, to the city and we'll be waiting for a greeting.
Wait, so you traveled all the way from South Africa to Korea by yourself?
By myself.
Wow. Wow. Give this girl a bounce. Give this girl a bounce. You flew all the way
from
right across the world, and then you got to Korea on your own. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then your mom allowed you. Wow.
I made my way to my quarantine facility by myself.
Damn.
Yes.
You're a bigger person than I am because, I mean, I was just, you know, crapping my pants, Oscar. But luckily for me, we came as a group of 8 people. So I was not traveling alone, you know. When they recruited us from South Africa from an agency, which I'm not going to name for obvious reasons. I'm not going to talk about them. I'm not giving anybody any promo. I'm not doing that. They don't deserve it. So, yeah, 8 people, and then we got you. So at least, you know, I kind of had some home comforts, you know, like in a new country and stuff. But then you had to go through all of those things on your own. You had to go from A to B, you know, and you were alone in a foreign country. Were you not confused? I mean, were you not scared?
I think I was nervous. And obviously, like, I've never been here before. I don't know anyone, you know.
Uh-huh.
But the way, like, everything was set up, I feel like it was easy. Because, obviously, my agent told me, okay, you're going to get a flight from South Africa to Incheon Airport. Once you get there, there's a bus. Look for this bus number. Get on the bus. It will take you to a train station. When you get there, buy a train ticket to the city. From there, you'll get at this point, from this point, you get a taxi, a quarantine taxi. From there, then this is what he wrote the address in Korean.
Oh my God.
And then this is what you show the taxi driver. So that's what I did. I showed the taxi driver the address, and then he took me there. So when I got to that facility, they were waiting for me.
And how are you paying for all these things? I mean, or did you do like other experts who actually exchange money at the airport? Did you do that before?
I exchanged money. Initially, I wanted to exchange at OR, but I was late for my flight. I exchanged when I got to Doha because I bought a ticket from South Africa to Qatar. And when I got to Doha, I exchanged money to Korean won. So I paid for everything.
Well, that was easy. Wow.
Yes.
We were actually spoiled. You know, like our arrival here was smooth and seamless. And of course, you know, down here, we are mostly cashless, you know how we use WeChat, you know, to pay for things. And so I don't remember, did we exchange money? I don't remember us exchanging money, but I think one of my friends, well, he's a friend now, he tried to do that. He did that. I think he exchanged 1,000 or something. But yeah, and I remember trying to cash out, you know, trying to withdraw money from my Capitec account, and I think I used it just once, and then the next day there was no money. I mean, that's how high the currency is. Cleaned me out. Like 3 days into the country, I was cleaned out and stuff. But of course, we got loans and stuff, which we regrettably had to pay much later. But of course, it was a loan. So, but then that was that. So, moving to Korea, and now everything, you found your school, now you're working, and they tell you, well, okay, you start work next week. And how's the mood? How are you feeling? You know, I mean, are you ready for this? Are you excited? Do you want to just take the plunge? Or you still have to think to yourself, like, do I really want to teach? Am I even a teacher? Did you even want to teach before coming to Korea?
Before coming to Korea, yes, I was tutoring. And, well, I wasn't sure if really I was going to do this, you know, like more in a formal setup. Because, you know, tutoring was just an after-school program. So that was more relaxed. So on our way from South Africa to Doha, I was like, Nikki, what are you doing? Are you really ready for this?
Yep.
You know, but yeah, well, the first few classes, I can tell you now, it was a mess. Because it was a mess because I expected, okay, when I had an interview, they told me I'll be teaching kindergarten and elementary. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, no, man, I love them kiddies. It will be fine, you know. Mm-hmm. But when I got there, I actually realized that it was an after-school program where I was teaching from kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, high school. And I was also teaching elderly people who, you know, wanted to learn English because they wanted to relocate to either Canada, the UK, mm-hmm. or America. Mm-hmm. So that for me was a challenge, but with the other groups, it was just okay because I had to follow a certain curriculum. So with the elderly ones, I was just teaching, you know, grammar.
It's more freestyle, right? Just more freestyle, I think.
Yeah.
Wait, so they had you teaching kindergarten, after school programs, and then adults?
Because the whole school, it's an after school program. So these kids go to the normal schools. And after school, they come to our academy, you know. So, yeah. So I would teach, you know, kindergarten, elementary level, middle school, high school, and those elderly ones. Because I was working from 2 p.m. until 9:30 p.m.
Wow.
So for the first 2 hours, it's kindergarten. And then after that, it's elementary. After that, it's middle school and high school, which I have like 3, 4, 5 students per class for middle school and high school, and then the elderly ones was one-on-one.
Wow. And then with all of that, which group was your favorite?
Kindergarten and elementary.
So you enjoyed the kids more than the adults?
Yeah.
What would you say is the difference though?
I think the reason why I liked or loved teaching those groups was because the English level was like more advanced than the other groups. It's so funny because the kindergarten's English level is more higher than a middle schooler or a high schooler or the elderly people that I was teaching. So for that, I had to speak really slow and, you know, explain things to them like I was speaking to a 3-year-old. So with the elementary level and the younger ones, you know, we use songs, we dance and all that. It was more relaxed. It was fun. So with them, you just have to teach them how to speak. They have to listen to you, you know, understand what you're saying and respond.
So that's quite easy, I'd say, huh? It's quite easy. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm in stark contrast, you know, of you. Because when I got to China, I was just... Yeah, I mean, I was all about high school, primary school, or middle school. Mm. And then they were like, nah, no, bro, you go to kindergarten. I was like, kindergarten? Are you serious? I don't even like children. Why? For me, that was just, no, man, it was just challenging for me because, I mean, I had never taught like children. So I get here and then we do training and now we have to, play games? We have to... sing songs, we have to dance, we have to play with the kids. I'm like, I don't want to play with kids. I don't even like children. I don't want to be touched by children. I don't like kids. But then they were like, well, I mean, you came here to teach. And so this is your job. I mean, you do this, you play Baby Shark, you play this song, and you do this. So we basically are going to teach you how to take class. And then we had to do all of these exercises, and we had to basically learn. Because to me, I'm not sure if the same, you know, ideology of teaching was the same. But then for me, when they said teaching, I literally thought, take your textbook, grab your chalk, go to the classroom, say hi, tell them what we're learning, write notes, they copy that, classwork, and you're done. Biggest shock of my life, you know. Now I have to play, I have to play games, I have to sing, I have to dance. I what is this? So I really grappled with all of that. Like, I didn't have a good time. I swear to you, I mean, it took me like a good 7 months to adjust to how things are done here. Really, I mean, but I don't know. I'm just speaking, not from my own experience. But then there are some people who just got here and then they enjoyed the ride. Like, okay, well, I like kids, I love kids. I didn't like children. I had to learn how to like children, you know, because, I mean, it's your job, you learn. And then some, you know, just, I don't know, just down the line, you start enjoying it and stuff. But then how was that for you? You know, did the system of teaching in Korea baffle you or shock you? Or did you also have the same expectations that you were going to go into the classroom and teach? Because, you know, back home, we just go to school, we learn classwork, notes, and we go home. Did that shock you as well?
I was shocked because, like I mentioned, before I came here, I was tutoring.
Yeah.
And of it, I was tutoring based on how I was taught as well. You know, you get to class, you just write notes, explain there and there, and that's it. But when I first got here, it was a mess because I was not, you know, I was just shocked at how they do things, how the teaching process is here in Korea. So I had to adjust to, you know, their teaching ways and all that. So they do have textbooks, but the way the textbook is set up is totally different. So they have, for English, they have a listening textbook where I have to just read or play a CD for them, then they have to listen. And obviously what's written in the textbook is not the whole audio. They have to listen and fill in the missing words and all that. They have a writing textbook, you know, where they just have to just write essays and all that. They have a different one where they have to, you know, it's grammar and all that. So the whole setup for me was, I was shocked. It was different, totally different to what I was used to, how I was taught and how I was even trying to teach back in South Africa. So that is why the first 2, 3, 4 weeks was a mess for me because I was like, Nikki, but why am I even here? What am I doing here? Can I even do this?
Yeah, because you start doubting yourself. So like, what is going on? Because I don't seem to be getting it right. Because, I mean, this just goes totally against what I know education as in my own country. And then you kind of need to sit down with somebody who has been here much longer. And then if they can get through to you, and then you're good. But then for me, it took a long time. Because, I mean, as I mentioned, you know, and you mentioned as well, that you have to play games. I don't like games. There were instances where I was like, I don't want to play a game. They said, but you have to. I said, I don't like doing games.
But this is part of the curriculum. It's part of the lesson. That's
bro, I didn't care about all of that. I just didn't want to do games. I didn't want to play with no kid. I was like, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to... Yeah, I mean, like, my first few months here, it was a mess. At least you had a few hiccups. Like, for like three weeks or 4 weeks or something like that. For me, it was just an ongoing struggle. I just didn't really understand the education. I just didn't get it. How am I supposed to teach you this way? I'm here to teach you and you want to play? How? It didn't make sense. But of course, you know, the longer you do it, the more you do it, then you kind of start, you know, aligning, you know, your experience, you know, with theirs. You try to incorporate what you've learned and you try to, I don't know, you just try to cope, I think, you know. But, yeah, that was for me in China. So now you're working, and were there any colleagues from South Africa or from any other country at your school?
At my first school, I was the only teacher. Not even the only English native teacher or the only black person or whatever. I was the only teacher. You know, it was just me and my director. So I would teach everything and all the classes in English and she would teach in Korean. Because the setup in Korea is that we teach English and they have to teach the same content in Korean.
Oh.
So it was my director. So at my current school, because it's a government school, the setup is that I am always assigned a homeroom teacher who happens to be an English-Korean teacher. So I teach everything in English, and then she has to explain then in Korean, the same content in Korean. So for example, if we using a textbook, and we are currently on lesson one, right?
Yes.
Lesson one, at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So for the first time, lesson one, I will teach lesson one, part one. She will teach lesson one, part two. And I will teach lesson one, part three. That's how it is at my current school.
Oh, wow, that's
so
different.
So she teaches the same content in Korean, and I have to just explain everything in English. But for my first school, I was the only teacher. So I had to make sure that all my students really get what I'm saying to them. They really, you know, take something out of their classroom.
Even the small ones, like the kindergarten ones, you had no Korean teacher assisting you?
There was no Korean teacher. There was no colleague, native teacher. I was the only teacher. The reason why I say I was the only teacher, because, yes, sometimes only for middle school and high school, that's when my director would teach the same content in Korean. Sometimes it will be a different content, you know, but for the other groups, I was the only teacher. They would come in for English, and then after that, they go to my director's class, and then she teaches something different, and they have to go home.
And then what about language barrier? You know, did the kids understand, or you had to be more dramatic for them to get it?
Yeah, I feel like I was overselling it. Hello, student, how are you? Are you happy? Are you okay? Are you angry? Like, I had to, you know, try and, like, get...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, I'm a black person. The young kids have never seen a black person before, you know. So there's just always, like, complications in the classroom.
And that's my next question. How did the students react to, you know, as you said, you know, they'd never really had any close encounter, you know, with a black person. You know, how were the kids like?
COVID was a mess. It was a mess because obviously private academies, you know, parents have a say.
Of course.
You know,
same thing here.
Like some of them would go home and be like, oh, my teacher is a black person and blah 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 blah.
Oh dear.
And yeah, so the parents will come to school and complain and all that. And at that time, there's nothing my director can do. She cannot fire me for being black, or she cannot fire me because the student feels like I should be white or I should be any other person.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So she would explain to them like, no, but this is what's happening and all that. It got to a point where some of them would just take the students out of the academy because they were taught by a black person.
I thought it's only happening here, because I mean, I've literally heard stories of people losing their jobs because the parents did not approve of them, you know, and the kid was like, I actually have a friend who once got dismissed because of the color of her skin, you know. As you said, they have a say in what goes on in and around the school, you know, more specifically in the classroom, you know, in terms of who teaches my child. And if the child doesn't like you, the mom could literally just march into the office and say, I don't like this teacher, and this teacher is bad.
Mm.
And then they would be like, but how is this teacher bad? I don't like her. Why? And then they can't say. Sometimes they do say.
They don't like anything. They just don't like you because you're a black person.
Exactly. So I thought, you know, like it was more of a thing that, you know, people experience here as well. Because, I mean, it used to happen. It still does happen somewhere else. I don't know where, but it kind of does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then people lose their jobs because so-and-so's mom thinks you're not good enough because what? Their teacher had long, flowing blonde hair and piercing blue eyes, and you know that. And then now these kids have been conditioned to think that, oh, white is pretty and white is good and whatnot. And, yeah, it's quite a mess. But I'm... For me, it was not like that. Like, I've never really had such problems, you know, thank God. I've never really experienced that. I've never had that problem. But I know people who have actually gone through such things where, you know, the director was like, listen, I mean, I'd like to keep you here, but, you know, there's so much protesting going on. And another thing, this is a business before a school. So if there are so many complaints, you know, stacked up against you, that means I'm losing business. And as you said, some were taking kids out. And if they take the kids out, not only out of your class, but out of the entire school, I don't know about Korea, but here, if I decide that my child is not going to go to this school, I can demand a refund. I don't know about Korea. Can they do that there as well?
I think that was the same thing, because when I came to Korea, I had short hair, right?
Yeah.
So what everything else was happening, you know, because I feel like my director was satisfied with how I was doing my work.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily enough, some of the students liked me,
mm-hmm.
you know. So when the other parents were coming and complaining, she didn't have anything against me, you know, to fire me or say, no, Nikki, do this, or I have to, you know, let you go because the parents are complaining. She just, you know, she was just caught in a situation where she had to choose between me and the parents. I remember she came to me, she's like, this is what's happening. Parents are complaining and we're losing business because some of them are already taking their students, their children out of the academy,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, take them other academies. Can't you like have, don't you have like something you can do to your hair?
Wow.
You know, just.
They wanted you to have like what? Long flowing hair?
Long, maybe blonde hair, I don't know, but just like, look, I don't know. I don't know how they wanted me to look. You know, and I was like, okay, what is wrong with my hair? And she's like, no, but I just like want you to look different.
No, you want me to look
white. I just want you to look, because what's happening right now is not good for the business. So all those things that I went through was, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to work for a government school, because now I'm at a government school and I can do whatever that I want with my hair. Nobody's complaining to anybody. It's really, I'm at peace now.
That's so good.
There's just a lot going on at private academies. Unfortunately, not all of them, but yeah.
There is a lot going on because, I mean, as you said,
and I
reiterate, you know, parents have a say. So if
yeah.
something doesn't sit well with them, you know, I used to have dreadlocks. You know this. You know me. You've known me for years. I had dreadlocks, and then I moved from the kindergarten to a new school, which here we call them training centers. You know, you call them academies. We call them training centers in China. So I worked for a certain training center, and then for some reason, another parent, you know, those bougie rich parents, you know, who think they control the whole world.
Mm.
So suddenly it was brought to my attention that so-and-so's mom doesn't like my hair. Why don't you like my hair? What's going on? Yeah, didn't like my dreadlocks and stuff. And, you know, they tried to chalk it up as something of a health hazard, like, my hair is long and I play with the children and then the kids keep touching my hair like I had dirty hair or something like that. So now this boss, this former boss of mine, he pulled me to the office and you know how they tried to kind of ease you into it? Like, you know, if you, the same thing that happened to you, you know, maybe if you looked different and all this and that, you know, maybe you could just go cut your hair. And I'm like, do you even understand what this type of hair is? These are dreadlocks, you know, interwoven hair, you know, like, twisted hair, like, I can't just cut it off. If I cut it off, it means it's gone. It's never gonna grow back.
Yeah.
And I like my hair.
My hair.
And my hair is me. I like my hair. I am my hair.
Yeah.
Sorry, India, Ari. I am my hair. I like my hair. You know, I'm not gonna cut it. And then it just became this whole big brouhaha of, you know, listening, you know, cooperative and blah, blah. I was like, I am not doing it. I'm putting my foot down. I am not cutting my hair. You hired me with the same hair. You thought I was good enough back then when you hired me, and now suddenly I need to cut my hair because so-and-so's mom thinks my hair looks, what, grotesque? It's untidy? I'm like, y'all don't even wash your hair every day, and you want me to wash my hair every day? You're sick. I'm not cutting. Yeah, I remember speaking to a friend of mine, Mo, and then he was like, are you going to? I was like, I'm not cutting my hair. I literally stood up for myself. I didn't cut the hair. And then I moved to a new school because, I mean, COVID came and then there were all these policies and then schools are not paying. I mean, you move. So I got to a new school where everybody loved my hair. And I was like, imagine if I just cut my hair. You know? Imagine if I just cut my hair. And then I would hear these people, they think my hair is it's nice, beautiful and wavy. And it's so exotic, as they called it, you know? So, yeah, I eventually cut my hair when I decided to. I was like, well, it's time. Let me just go and get a fresh look. It's weird how, you know, how they try to kind of, I don't know, like sync your abilities to your appearance, you know, like if you look a certain way, you can't deliver a service, you know, like you can't teach if you look this way, like how? I'm here to teach, nothing else. I don't know, but also
in Korea, for the fact that you are South African, you're from Africa also, you know, you just get undermined, even though you do most of the work than your other colleagues. Just because you're from Africa, you don't get the credit for the work that you do. No. They rather just credit for literally just, you know, giving just one input and not doing all the work. Than you who's actually just working silently and they see what you're doing.
Thank you. They always do see, but never really acknowledge, right?
That's so depressing as well.
True. I mean,
it's so stressful.
It really is. Yeah. So now you are in Korea and now you understand the lifestyle and everything else. So you finally moved from that school to a new one. And one question I like asking, I mean, what is it about Korea that makes you wish you were in SA, you know? Let's talk culture shock. You know, what is that Koreans do that we as South Africans back home do not do?
Okay, there's a lot of culture shock. I don't even know where to start. But first of all, you know, in South Africa, if, you know, you maybe I like your shirt or whatever cloth that you have on, or I like your hair, I would ask for permission before I even touch you.
Oh my God. I know what you mean. Yeah?
Yeah. So in Korea, you just have people coming and pulling and yanking your hair. Like, what is going on? Why are you doing this?
No wonder Korea gets confused for China. We've got the same problems.
Exactly. Like, you just have, we call them ajumas, like these grannies and all that.
It's always the grannies, right? It's always the grannies.
Why?
Man, they bully us as grannies, hey? Like, they're just bullies,
I always get offended. I'm sorry, but I do get offended. Because, like, you cannot just walk up to me and just start touching me. I don't know you.
It's weird how they feel so entitled, like they can just walk up and touch you. But then if you were doing that, you'd be in jail. It's weird, especially when you have dreadlocks. They'll be just pulling my hair like in all directions.
You have your natural hair, or because we love to do braids and all that. Yeah, that's, and imagine somebody pulling your braids. Yeah. You know, so that's just one of the things that they do. Also, they love, you know, giving out gifts, like giving you food and all that. Even if you don't like whatever that they're giving you, you have to accept it, because if you decline, it seems rude.
True.
It seems disrespectful.
True.
So whether I'm giving you, they like giving out rice cakes, which still at this point, I don't understand why they're eating that thing, because it tastes horrible. But anyway.
It's tasteless. It's bland. Well, in China, they actually give out cigarettes a lot. Like, so China. If a Chinese man meets you, he likes you, he gives you a smoke.
He just gives you that, exactly. At least if I'm a smoker and you give me a smoke, that's something I like, right?
And they never take no for an answer.
And I have to take it because I don't want to seem rude or disrespectful.
They never take no for an answer. They'll give you, they'll be so insistent to end up taking it. So that's that.
And another thing, back home, you know, for example, if you, let me use KFC, for example, right? If you go to KFC, you want to buy whatever that you're buying, the attendant there, you get the hello, hi, how are you? I'm good, I'm good. You just start talking, like chit-chat, like small talk. Korea have that.
Do they chit-chat as well?
You know, you can just, you can have a chit chat with a random person while you're waiting for a bus, or you're waiting for a taxi back home, whether you're at ShopRite, you're trying to buy something, you know, chit chat, yo, how are you? I'm good. You start talking about the weather, you start talking about football, whatever that you talk. Koreans don't have that. It's just hello, hi, bye. That's it.
At least they say hello. Here they're silent to each other.
No, some of them don't.
But then with foreigners, they always try to talk. Like, they always try to have these little conversations with foreigners. But to each other, they don't even acknowledge each other. And as you said, like, back home, you know, you could just walk into a room and meet someone and you start talking about the weather, about everything else. But in China, you could walk into a room of, like, 20 people and nobody's talking. They're just looking at their phones.
Mind your business. Everybody's on their phone. I always thought I was, like, overusing my phone until I came to Korea.
Nah, man.
These people are always on their phones.
It's just like that. So what about the food, though? You know, I mean, like, your first Korean meal. Do you remember what you had?
Yeah, I remember the first time I had Korean food was when I... Okay, firstly, because I mentioned that when I got here, I had to go to the quarantine facility, right?
Yes.
And I found that my director bought some food stuff for me.
Mm-hmm.
So she bought seaweed and other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never had seaweed before. So I got there and I was like, what is this? She's like, this is seaweed. This is so nice. Try it out.
Until you tasted that.
And I said, I was like, what is this? Am I eating grass? What is this?
Yeah, seaweed has it's an acquired taste.
Yeah, at first it tasted awful, but I do eat it now and I like it. So when I got out of the quarantine, my boss actually took me to a Korean barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I had kimchi, I had other Korean food, and I really liked it. I really like Korean food because even now at school, they do cook for us, and we have to pay for that lunch, and, you know, I like Korean food. I feel, because they eat a lot of vegetables, and Koreans don't like fried food or grilled food like we do back home. They eat a lot of greens, so that's why I like Korean food.
Girl, you've been obsessed with that kimchi, hey? Wow. Yeah, man, now you love your kimchi, hey? Like, everything you have, you know, has kimchi in it.
Yeah, I always thought kimchi was a meal, like a whole meal, like you ordering a streetwise five.
I don't know, man. I just can't stomach the kimchi, though. I don't know why, hey? I cannot. I've tried it like once or twice, and I'm like, nah, man, this just tastes weird. I mean, of course, China has its own fair share of weird food. There's a whole lot. When I first got here, I had donkey when I just landed.
What?
Yeah, donkey burger. Like, I had like this... Yeah, this just braised donkey burger that's shredded, stuffed into some type of pastry and stuff. Yeah, that was donkey burger. I mean, over the years, I've had, like, frogs and snails and all those things. I mean, it's kind of weird out here. But you kind of get used to it, right? Can you cook Korean food now? Can you cook it now?
Yes, some of the food I can, actually. Like, I have my favorite kimchi jjigae.
Uh-huh.
It's like a mixture of vegetables, and some of them use beef, some of them use pork. Okay. You just cook pork, whatever, and you just mix it up with a lot of vegetables, and you just make it a whole mixture. Like that, and that always cook.
And then what
and
about...
Also cause
yes?
Acha, I miss the taste of acha.
This is the thing. The first time I got to China, I mistook kimchi for acha. It does have, you know, the look of acha.
Yeah, it does have it.
It really does look like acha. It does. And then I was so disgusted and disappointed. I was like, what is this? I thought this is acha. But then, I mean, like, honestly, like in hindsight, like, why would Chinese people have acha? I mean, I should have made a better choice. Like, why would they have acha? So that's that. But I do like, I think I like Japanese food, actually. I do like Japanese. Have you had Japanese before? It should be there, right? They do have Japanese in Korea. Have you tried that before?
I don't think I've heard Japanese, but I've had Chinese food before because I remember I once went to Chinese cuisine and all that.
What's your favorite?
So Japanese, no.
What's your favorite Chinese food?
Unless if... They call it, is it marabang or what? Marabang, like it's a mixture of, it's, I don't know if it's pork or beef and vegetables and all that. Yeah, I don't
I've never had that. I've never had that before. Hey?
Marabang, yeah, whatever.
Probably maybe they use like a Korean term to describe it, and down here it's different.
Yeah, maybe this is the Korean term to describe them, because whenever like I try to, you know, talk to my student about what's your favorite food and all that, they always say, I don't know if it's marabang or whatever they call it, and they'll be like, this is a Chinese food. This is a Chinese food, teacher. Like, oh, okay.
No, we do have Korean barbecues, yeah. Actually, my friend Clara, she loves that. She loves Korean barbecue and stuff. And then now, do you see yourself living in Korea, you know, let's say for like another 5 years?
I don't know about 5 years, but I think next year I'll still be in Korea. And
are you in a good place? You're in a good place. You're content right now, huh?
Yeah, honestly, my working environment is more peaceful now. So, because we spend a lot of time at work.
So important.
So if the environment is, yeah, so if the environment is not peaceful, you're always like, oh, should I go back home? Where should I go? Should I relocate to another country and all that? So I was always feeling like that at my previous academy. But now I am more settled. I think I'll also be in Korea next year. And I don't know what I would do the other year. I wanted to move to another country, but I don't know if I should disclose that now.
No need.
Yeah.
No need. Keep your cards close to your chest. No need for that. But what about the lifestyle in Korea? What about the lifestyle, like the social circles of Korea? How's that? Like, you know, do you guys hang out a lot with foreigners? Do you guys get along? Because, I mean, I'll tell you, here there's drama, you know, but then I want to hear from you. What's the scene like in Korea?
I do have a Korean friend who I met. She's one of those people. What do we call them back home? Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, okay.
You know those people who, yeah. So that's how I met her. Her name is Eugene. So I went out shopping, and then she came up to me. She knows English. She's fluent in English because she studied in Canada.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. So all of them were just looking at me. They're like, because that's the thing. They think you cannot even hear a little bit of Korean. So some of the Koreans, they're not racist, but they just don't want to come to you because they feel like they will have to speak English.
They try to avoid English, right?
English they don't know.
Even down here, they try to avoid English. Like, no.
Yeah,
and you can see that they're sweating in their pants.
Exactly. They do want to talk to you. So I do have a Korean friend, Eugene. So we do go out most of the times. And I do have South African friends.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, before, I used to avoid South Africans because it's always drama.
There's drama, right?
It's always drama.
But then what?
And in Korea,
what do you think causes that, though? Because I mean, I think we just kind of don't like each other, right?
We don't like each other. That's the thing. That's how I used to feel, at least before I met my friends now, because I just met them when I moved here to the island.
Uh-huh.
But previously, I used to think like maybe we just don't like each other as black people, because even when you meet some, because Korea has like a huge community of other African countries, because they're here on scholarship studying.
Uh-huh.
Either you're from Russia or you're from Ghana or you're from Nigeria, whatever. But just because you're black, people just prefer to look the other way.
You're fellow foreigners. So,
yes. Your fellow black people, even it's even the white people that we use. I don't know if they're pretending to, you know, be happy to see you, but if it's another black person, it's always like, they would rather look the other way and pretend like they didn't see you. So I always felt like we just don't like each other as black people. I don't know if people feel like, she's a fellow black woman, she's taking up my space, or I don't know what the issue is.
I think that could be it. Hey, because I mean, there's just a whole lot of, you know, yeah, people just don't really, because it does happen here as well. Like, you'd be so happy, like, oh, hi, and then they'll just give you that ice, they're like, hi, and you're like, okay, I shouldn't have done that, okay, moving on, bye. It does, yeah. Especially when you find yourself living in a predominantly white area, well, Chinese, you know, city or district, and the likes, and then you haven't seen like your fellow black people, and then suddenly, boom, there's one, and you're so excited, right? Like, oh, hey, you look like me. Hi, hello, and then.
And I'm like, hello. Exactly. That's how you feel whenever you see a fellow black person.
It doesn't. But some people are like that, you know, but not everybody though. Some are that way.
Not everybody, because since I moved to this island, I've met other, you know, fellow black people, and they're cool.
And you're having a good time. You're having a good time. Girl, you're always by the ocean. Hey, you're living your best life, honestly. I told Zandy the other day, I was like, Nigyo is living her best life in Korea. Like, there's no weekend where you're indoors. Actually, now it makes sense, because the other city where you lived in, you were kind of like doing this hiking thing a lot, but now you actually go to see more places now.
Yeah. I think at the time, because I didn't see any black person, you know, around. Even when I used to just go for a walk and all that, I was always like the center of the attention, if I should put it like that, because I feel at that town they didn't see more black people, you know. Even though there's a girl, my girl Wendy, who used to live like 10 minutes away, but she was always away from our place because she thought like there's no other black people besides just the both of us, you know. So it was always like this. So I just prefer, you know, either go hiking or go to the gym.
So it's the same as China, you know, that if you're like, well, black, you know, you become the center of the attention. Like, do they like take pictures as they do here?
Some of them do, because, okay, for example, yesterday we went to one of the famous oceans, or one of the famous beaches, because we were celebrating my friend's birthday. So there were tourists there, because the whole island is more like a tourist attraction and so on.
Yeah.
So there were tourists there, and they came to us and like, can we take pictures with you? And we're like, yes, we're so hyped, and then they took pictures of us and all that. But you could see that some of the Koreans are irritated. True. Like, why are you people taking pictures with those people? Some of them don't like us. I'm sorry to say this.
I mean, it does happen. And yeah, because of that, I don't really take pictures with anybody. The only time I would say yes to a picture is if a child is asking me. You know, I can't say no to a child. Because, I mean, I teach kids now. So I've kind of just, you know, I've been like, it's okay. I mean, I can't say no to a child. Yeah. Like, I can't really break a child's heart. But if you as a full-grown man and you say, can I take a picture with you? And like, you're out of your mind. No way. No, thank you. No, I don't.
Some of the parents will come and be like, teacher, can I take a picture of you? You'll be like, okay, that's cool.
I'm
fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of weird.
If a Korean likes you, they will go all out to show that they really like you. And also, if you meet a racist Korean, you feel it. Because, well, I don't know if I should be talking about this, but I experienced my first, you know, racist
encounter.
Encounter, yes. Like, 2-3 weeks ago, I was so mad, Cole. I was so angry. And I was so pissed, and I was like, I was even starting to question God, like, why did you make me this way? If everywhere I go, people always treat me like this. There's a lady, I'm in a bus, there's just chilling there, I have my AirPods on, I'm just minding my own business, I'm on TikTok, you know.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this lady sits next to me, and, you know, she just covers her nose.
Wow.
She had her nose covered the whole time she was sitting next to me, because the seat next to me, that was the only available seat. Because that's the thing, people rather stand up than come and sit next to you as a black person.
Damn, that's right? Deep, hey?
Yeah. Yeah. So she sat next to me, she had her nose covered the whole time, and I was like, what is going on? Do I smell? Maybe my colleague should have told me that I smell or something. The kids should have told me. But here you are, covering your nose while sitting next to me. What is going on? Okay. I tried to avoid her. I tried. Then somebody got out of the bus, and then there was an available seat. She moved from where she was sitting and went to sit on the other seat. Once she got there, then she didn't cover her nose. And then
her nose was uncovered? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Trying to show me that I was covering my nose because I was sitting next to you. And I was like, I was so mad the whole time. I was so angry. Was
it is like, irritating, is actually. It really is irritating. At least here, they don't really show you. You know, like 9-9, like straighten your face, like, I don't like you. I mean, they do kind of try to mask all of that by smiling a little bit and you know, trying to keep their distance. But they never really just react, you know, as candidly as that woman did in Korea. It does exist. I mean, it does happen here as well. But then, yeah, like in subtle tones. Like, it's very subtle. But the thing is, they may not really show you that they're racist or be racist to your face. But then there are conversations being had at home. Their kids, you know, tend to blow them out of the water because what you hear your mom say about someone else, you're a child, you're just going to say it, you know. So you do find kids who do say this, you know, these racially insensitive things to, you know, people of color, you know, and stuff. And then now you can't really blame the child because the child heard this from their parents and stuff. And then you ask yourself, what do you teach your kids at home?
Yeah, one of my students once told me that I looked like a monkey, and I was so angry. And I made sure that everybody knew that I am so angry.
Good for you.
And my previous enemy, I made sure that everybody knows that I'm not having it. I want them to call the parents of the kid. And I was, okay, she's a kid. She's 7 years old. And probably she had it from somewhere, either YouTube or whatever the platform.
Parents. It's always the parents.
Right? But I wasn't really mad at her until I spoke to my director. And she asked me, is it wrong?
Are you kidding me?
And I'm like,
you just called me a monkey.
Exactly. And I'm like, what do you mean? So the whole experience, I was so angry. And I remember one day I prayed, I was like, God, how can I be so mad at a child?
Was this your first school or your current school?
My first school. My first school.
Or the private academy.
Yeah. So I was like, God, how can I be so mad at a child? She's young. I mean, come on. Because I felt like I was just so angry at her because she's smart. Even in class, like when she wanted to answer questions, I was just avoiding her. Because I was so angry at her.
It happens.
So
you're only human.
It happens.
It does
so
happen.
So my mental health was on stake. Like, I had to move out of that academy. I had to.
True. And then since you mentioned mental health, I mean, are you now, like, fully adjusted to the Korean lifestyle? You know, the weather, the time zones and stuff, you know, the environmental factors? Your surroundings. Are you now good? Like, have you fully settled in? Do you miss home on some days?
I do miss home every day, especially when I'm amongst Koreans, because I feel like there's just that aura, like you're a foreigner amongst us, you know? And I always miss being around people that are like me, you know? Because unfortunately, I don't know if I should say unfortunately or fortunately, at my first private academy, I was the only teacher and I was black. And then now I am the only black person in the entire school.
Damn.
You get it?
So you can't even have umdase, mada, nothing like that. I do have umdase by work. Thank God for that, because I'd be dead if I didn't. What a money! Nothing like that.
I have a co-teacher, but she's from America. She's so cool, but, you know, yeah. So I do miss home, but I feel like the environment is chilled now. The environment is peaceful, even though they don't show it to me. Maybe they don't like me. I don't know, because they don't show it to me. I prefer it that way. Let's just do our work. And my co-teachers, the homeroom teachers, they are so cool. They're fine. That is why I feel like, should I have the opportunity to renew this contract, I will.
Right.
Because all of them, they're just so nice.
I think you should. It takes a long time to find a school like that.
Yeah, so we are coexisting nicely and beautifully in the classroom. So I'm not taking anything away from it. But outside of work, yeah, I wish I was home. And there are days when I'm like, well, let's just be here. We have just arrived. Let's just stay a little bit longer.
It's not so bad. I'm making money. I'm shopping. You know, I'm shopping. I can eat what I want to eat. I can buy what, you know, like I can wear what I want to wear.
So we've just been here for a year. Let's just be here and see how it goes. Because it's not everybody who is racist, you know. You meet good people out there, and even random strangers, you know, can meet a random stranger that is just so nice and, you know, try to show you that they appreciate you or they like you and stuff like that. Yes, they do stare at you, but you can tell if somebody's staring at you because they don't like you, and if somebody's staring at you because they just admiring you and all that.
True. Because, staring in Asian countries seems so normal. Like, it's been normalized, you know, to stare at people. That's something you just gonna have to roll with, but it's still kind of austere, and, you know, like, in some sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are you staring at? You know, like, stop looking. It's quite crazy. It really is. Wait, so how far are you from the capital, you know, from Seoul?
Because I'm on an island, so I have to take a flight out. So wow. I think I'm like an hour away.
It's a 1 hour flight. But that's pretty cool. At least you're an island and everybody wants to go to an island. So, I mean, you're not really missing out on anything. You're the island girl.
I always feel locked up, especially if I want to go to the mainland. Sometimes they'll tell you that there are no flights at that time or at that day that you want to fly out because they're fully booked or other things. But, yeah.
And then when does your school year start? Because here, our school year starts in September. What about Korea?
Korea starts in March, February.
So it's kind of the same-ish, like home? Would you say?
Because now we are on our first term, and then July we are going on vacation, and then that is our second term, and then in winter we will have our winter vacation until January, and then we'll go back to work mid-February, March, somewhere.
Well, our school starts in September, and July, yeah. I think that's the second semester of the year. So second semester / new school year, because the kids now, the grade threes are going to grade four after September, in the fall. They're going to the next grade. That's that. So what about dating and stuff? You know, is it as easy as it is? I'm not going to ask if you're dating anybody or whatnot. I just kind of want you to give like an overview. Is it as easy to get, you know, to get somebody there compared to, you know, how you would actually, you know, get someone at home? Like, is it easy or is it more difficult? Because now you're not only tackling a foreign country, you also have like, you know, this array of different races, you know, different cultural backgrounds of people, you know, different religious beliefs and all that, you know, so there's a lot to actually dissect. So that is what I'm asking, like, how easy is it? And I'm not gonna ask if you have a Korean boyfriend, because people hate that, so I'm not gonna ask that. Yeah, because I mean, like, it happens even here in China, like, yo, you have a Chinese boyfriend. I'm like, no I don't. But what about you? What's, you know, what's the story like, you know, what's the scene, you know, in Korea?
Yeah, well, I feel it's different. Like you mentioned this a lot, right? Mm-hmm. It's different because as long as you don't speak Korean or a bit of Korean, it's difficult. Because most Koreans can speak English. And even though some do, it's just like 5%,
10%.
You get it. So if you can speak Korean, then yeah, you are likely like to meet either a Korean or all that. But personally, I'm not speaking for everyone, right?
True.
But I feel like if you're a black person, there's a lot you have to, you know, there's a lot against you. Because I feel our fellow black people, they're looking for either Korean woman or this white girl.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because somebody once asked me, sorry to cut you, but somebody once asked me, why would you want to date a black guy? Because you're black. And I was like, I mean, I don't have to date other people. They're like, no, but you're in China. And I said, yeah, I am in China, but that does not mean that I should date a Chinese boy.
The hard ones are fun.
Yeah, they always expect you to just get here and then start dating, you know, like, you know, Chinese people, in your case, Korean people. I mean, you date who you like, not because of where you are.
It's
quite weird.
Yeah, well, I am seeing someone, but he's not Korean. And I feel like there's just a lot against us because also our fellow black people, they're looking for Korean women or white women. Korean men, some of them can't speak English, so they can't come to you. I'm not saying there's no black person that is dating a Korean. Yes, that they, but you need to at least speak a little bit of Korean, you know, or either that Korean can speak English fluently.
And then if that's the case, then it's much easier to navigate all of that. Well, another question. What about your apps? Do your apps, you know, come with a translator already embedded in them? Like our WeChat, actually, I'll give you an example. Our WeChat has a translation. Like, he can type in Chinese, and then I can just, you know, press and hold, and I translate that into English. Is it the same thing in Korea as well for Kakao? Is it Kakao that you use there? Right? Is it Kakao?
Yeah, it's Kakao. Kakao Talk, yeah.
Is it the same thing? Can you translate Korean to English?
There's actually a translation app called Papago. It has Japanese, Chinese, Korean, and English. So mostly that's what we use, Papago. So you can, you know, switch to any other language you want.
So you copy from Kakao and paste on the app.
No, like, it's a translation app. If maybe I want to speak to a Korean and I don't know what to say to them in Korean,
yeah,
I can speak in English and then it translates the whole thing. It has an audio option and you can type whatever and then it translates. Though Papago is not 100% accurate because sometimes... Yeah, there were days where...
True, it happens.
There were days where I think and the Koreans were like, but the translation is a little bit awkward. So in Korea, we don't use Google Maps. We use Naver. There's an app called Naver.
We have Tencent here.
We have Naver. So there's also Naver translation. So most Koreans, when they wanna, you know, try to send a message to us and they don't know how to, they use Naver translation.
And but then the actual app, like Kakao, does not have the option to translate on the app. It doesn't have that.
I don't think it has because Kakao for me is just like WhatsApp, and it comes in most. Yeah, there's a news feed that comes in Korean. So there's no way for you to translate it to English.
Well, thank God to the Chinese gods, we can translate on WeChat. Yeah.
There's no way for you to translate it to English. But any other apps, it comes in English and Korean.
At least there's some apps in English. Right?
Yeah. And most of the, like, it's important for us to just learn a little bit of Korean because most of the, they have this system where they just, you know, give us information based on the weather and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It always comes in Korean.
Well, that's good.
You have to translate that then get the information they're trying to send to you.
Right. So, being in Korea, is it something that you'd recommend to somebody back home? You know, would you say, well, wozani, I'm faleling apparently, wozani, I'm faleling handle, wuyani, mashaka. Would you say that? Would you recommend it to somebody?
If you've been following my post, I've been saying, I am willing to help people move this size because, first of all, I know from my personal experience, I always felt like, it's just a dream, and you need to have a certain amount of money in order for you to move. So yes, I do recommend.
How much money do you think one would need, you know, for the first month in Korea? How much? do you think you need?
Honestly, it's different. Okay, let me put it this way.
Just an estimate. When you come
when you come to Korea, first of all, because vegetables and fruits are very expensive here, so it's better for you to just buy those and cook for yourself than, you know, buy pizza and hamburger, which is more expensive.
Really?
You know, so yeah, those are expensive. Eating out is very expensive.
Oh, wow.
Well, some people say it's cheaper, but no.
No, China food is very cheap. China food is very cheap. My colleagues, my Chinese colleagues, could actually have like a full meal for under 20 RMB. Like a full meal. Not just a few things, like a full meal. With 10 RMB, you can get like your onions, your zucchini, your eggplants, your cabbage, your carrots. And under, you know, 10 to 20 RMB. And that's like food for the whole family, you know. So food is very cheap.
Well, Korea vegetables and fruits are so expensive, but because when I came, I had 10k, and before I came, I had 10k, and I had to give some for my mom. I came with like maybe 8,000,
and then that got you through the whole month or 2 months.
Yeah, that 8,000 rand, I don't know, maybe because at the first week I was at the quarantine facility and the food that I was eating then, it was food that my director bought for me. But I hardly ate those because I had to move with all those to my apartment. So for that 8,000, I survived the entire March and until I was paid on the 4th of April.
Wow.
And I still had close to like 4,000, 5,000 or so.
You really are good at stretching it. So for the hotel, the quarantine hotel, who was paying for that? Did you pay that yourself?
No, I didn't pay. The school paid for that.
Right, okay. And another question, when it comes to accommodation for teachers in Korea, does your school provide accommodation, or you need to pay that from your own salary, or do they give you a housing allowance like they do here?
There's two options. They give you like 400,000 won to look for an apartment yourself and pay for it. That's the tricky part. The 400,000 is for rent, right?
Yes.
But you know this apartment, they want you to pay like a deposit.
A deposit.
Yes. So that is on you. You have to pay that deposit yourself. They call it key money. So you have to pay that yourself, and then your school will only just give you that 400,000 won for rent every month. Or you can stay at the school accommodation where you don't even have to pop up a single amount.
And we know what those school accommodation, you know, we know what it looks like. I mean, some schools will give you like a nice, you know, flat. I was very lucky to get like, you know, decent apartment and stuff. But then now where I work, I need to get my own, pay my own deposit, pay my own rent. Of course, they do give me like housing allowance. So did you stay at the school accommodation or you opted for your own?
I've never opted for my own. Even when I first came here, I was staying at a school accommodation where, you know, there was everything. There was a bed, there was a table, microwave, refrigerator, all that. And even now, I'm staying at a school-provided accommodation because I'm trying to avoid that key money because it's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, life in Korea seems expensive because I remember there's this girl who lives in Korea and I always, like, watch her lives and stuff. And she always, you know, makes, you know, this one consistent, you know, point that life in Korea is expensive. It really is expensive. But then, is it easy to save money there for home?
Well, I think it is. I think it depends on, like, your financial obligations. Huh. But other than that, it's better than nothing. It's easier for you to save money because, you know, most of the people that I know, They're either studying or building back home.
Well, you that's know? Us.
So,
Black text.
Yeah. So they're choosing not
to, I mean.
Yeah. Not to save money and do other things. But it means if they were not doing those things, they would probably be saving that money.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, being who we are, helping out at home, you know, comes naturally, you know. You just gotta do it. I mean, we're happy to do it. I'm happy to do it, you know. If not me, then who? So, yeah, I'm okay with that. You know, just a little something, something. So.
People are able to save money, so people choose not to and, like, use it for other things. Because if you are building back home, it means that money that you have, it's enough for you, you know, to just buy whatever material that you need back home. And if you're putting yourself through school, how much are you paying? We know institutions in South Africa are very expensive, you know. So, true. Yeah.
True. And I think you'll be putting yourself through school as well. Hey, you know, candidate of something. So... You two are putting yourself through school as well, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good if you are able to. One thing I always say and am thankful for is that we're able to do what we've always wanted to do for ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
That's the most gratifying, you know, aspect of just being here and doing what we do. Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not always rosy and lollipops and rainbows, but. If you are able to attain, you know, obtain what you've always wanted and make it happen for yourself, I think that's what you look at. And you're like, it's really bad. I'm getting what I want. So whatever it is, it's okay. I mean, I'll drink it away. I'll get drunk and I'll forget. I'll drink it away. It's okay. I'll be fine. And stuff. But then how, you know, the language though, do you like miss speaking Tsonga there? You know, do you ever find yourself like, yo, I just kind of need to speak right now. I mean, I speak English all the time, but right now I feel like I should just, yeah, didn't get there, you know, and just be like.
Yeah, I'm like, I strong, again,
at least, I know, but. Yeah, I mean, you do have those days and you're like, damn, you know.
Yeah, for me, I do have others. Because la babu lagu song like Rulani, Munene, and all that. And Lorna, those are the people that I speak Chitsonga with, but they're at the mainland. And then the friends I have here, why one is from Soweto, the other one is from Rustenburg. So, wow. Yeah. It's either Arespedi or Swana and stuff like that.
I've only met two Tsongas in China. Only two. We're not, yeah, there's not a lot of us, so, I mean, it would be nice if more of us come over, you know?
Yeah.
Because you never really have your
people.
Yeah, like, I've only met two, yeah, from Limpopo, I mean, obviously. But I've never really had anybody around me that speaks Tsonga. I've never. I hardly, so.
I do know a lot of Limpopians, but some of them, they speak Sepedi, so... I want someone like Makalimpopo or Sishiho. That would be so nice.
No, your hometown. Yeah. Actually, when I traveled during the winter, it was my very first time meeting someone who says they're from Hazyview, because that's the town I'm from. I've never, ever met anybody from Hazyview, ever. Mm. I met this very nice white girl, her name is Marcel. And then we're drunk, of course, and then when I'm drunk, I'm too friendly. I hug everybody when I'm drunk. And that happened. And she's South African, and I'm like, where are you from? And she goes, Hazyview. I'm like, you don't know what you've just done for me. You don't know what you've just done for me. You know what you've just done for me. Like, you mentioned my home girl. She's like, you from there too? I'm like, look at us, we're two drunk souls. I mean, yeah, that was really nice. That was really nice.
Yeah.
She's a cool girl. I like her.
The girl who was celebrating her birthday yesterday, she's from somewhere in Sukukud. So... when we first met, and then I was like, where are you from? She's like, I'm from Limpopo. I'm like, where in Limpopo? Uh-huh. She's like, is it? Yeah!
Right? Okay.
I'm like, no, bro. I've been meeting people from all over South Africa, but not Polokwane, that side, at least.
Another thing, I mean, it does kind of get lonely out here, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
It really does so get lonely. Look at us. It's a Sunday, but we're here indoors.
Yeah, I know, right? And at first, when I was home, I just always thought, like, nah, it'll be easy. I would just call people at home when I miss them. But for now, there are days when I don't want to talk to them because I feel talking to them would just make things worse.
It sure does sometimes. It really does. But then anyway, I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do. You're there for a reason. And
exactly.
At the end of the day, you know. Anyway, I'm gonna give you an opportunity to ask me two questions before we wrap up. Two questions, if you have. If you don't, it's still fine. Something that you wanna know about me here. If you don't have...
About you or about you in China?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I have a segment where, a guest, asks me two questions.
Yeah. So, you've been in China for long now, right?
Yeah.
What advice would you give somebody who's, back home and wants to travel to China? Because, people always look... make it look like it's this glamorous life, strawberries and champagne and all that. I feel like people don't talk about the downs and the lows of it.
True.
People always talk about the good side of it.
True.
But what would you say who genuinely wants to move from South Africa or anywhere else to China?
I would say research. Just do enough research. This is something that we never really had time for, because when we were recruited, we had like 2 months, to get the papers, approved and collected and everything else. And shortly thereafter, we were on our way to China. And I mean, I thought I'd be in Beijing, but when I got there, I was like, are we in Beijing? And they said, no, darling, you're far from Beijing. This is not Beijing. This is another province. Beijing is like 2 hours away. So I didn't even know which city I was going to go and work in. I didn't know which province was I going to. I literally heard I'm going to China, and I knew Beijing and Shanghai. That's all. I didn't know that there are provinces. I knew literally nothing. It was literally just a blind, leap of faith. So I didn't do research, about schools and cities and counties, where do you work, how much do you get paid if you work there, what are the challenges, what to pack, what to expect, what type of, items you could bring on the plane, how to negotiate, your contract, how much should be paid, what are your rights, what can they do to you, what they can't do to you, how to handle conflict, how to stand up for it. I mean, I didn't research anything. And then another thing, I'm not trying to excuse my lack of research, but then back then, 2019 and stuff, there was, very little to no information about China. Because when we came to China, there wasn't really that much information available online. But now there's all these communities on Facebook, Instagram, wherever, there are groups now, So when you come here, you already know, what's what. You know which questions to ask. When you sign a contract, how to negotiate, who to ask, what to eat and all. So you come prepared. So in a nutshell, be as prepared as you possibly can be and have as much money as you possibly can scrunch around and get that. Because the first month to the second month, you don't really get any money because you're still training, processing your papers. And like I said earlier on, it took us like a month and a half to actually start working. That is why we kind of had to take some loans from the school, to just sustain ourselves. Because the RMB is like double or triple the rand, on different days. So I would say research as much as you possibly can. That's my answer.
Okay. So in addition to that, right? How much do you think, somebody who's in South Africa, who's now getting ready to prepare for their documents and all that, from the initial stage of preparing documents to relocating to China, to staying like a month or so before they get paid, how much should they have?
I spent around... Come again?
I as you said, you use an agency, right? So I think when you're using an agency, it's a little bit more expensive than when you do things yourself.
And we didn't know that, but true. Yes, using an agency is a little more expensive because they also charge you the agency fee and stuff like that to get things done. So I'd say that I spend around about 6K on documents and collecting all those things. And yeah, then coming to China, I think you'd need roughly about 6K RMB. And in some cases, in most cases, like 6,000 RMB is like 12,000 rands.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, China money is like double our rand or triple, depending on the exchange rate.
So the 12,000 is you to survive until you get paid,
and,
right?
Until you get paid. And sometimes, you know, now they don't really like offer accommodation for teachers. So you might actually need to get an apartment on your own and pay the deposit and pay the rent and all that. So, but the thing is, the food is cheaper down here, you know. So you don't, you just, so in a month, if you're okay with Chinese food, you can actually spend roughly like 800 for a month's worth of groceries. So it's really not expensive like that. Unless you're Colbin and you like eating foreign stuff, which is really expensive.
Yeah, I think that is the case also here in Korea, because you can have like a full meal for 10,000 won, which is like 300. Mm-hmm. Like for 2 days or so. I feel Korean food is cheaper than when you're buying pizza and hamburger and whatnot.
Always. It's always cheaper. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. But then, you know, I mean, it's livable. You do find schools would actually help and set you up on your first month. They'll pay for your apartment. If your contract stipulates that, you know, it comes an apartment, you can take it if you want. If you don't like it, you can add, you know, a few, you know, hundreds and get the one that you want. So China's kind of easy, man. Like, it's not really all dramatic all the time, but then, you know, it's quite doable. It is doable. You just need to have a thick skin to survive. Because, I mean, it is, after all, a foreign country. And it's not your mother's house. So you kind of need to go by the rules. Yeah, it's not your mother's house. That's just that. But over and above, I'd say, I mean, it's kind of okay. I mean, you do get homesick and stuff. But like I said, get a drink. You'll be fine. Get a drink.
Okay.
Go get a drink and besides, you'll get paid, man, and you'll go shopping and you'll be fine. Come on, like, yeah, you'll be good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, that does not really, like, you know, handle and help you with your deep-seated mental health issues, but it does kind of help here and there. So before we close, I'm going to ask you, what has been your highlight in Korea?
My highlight in Korea? I don't know, I think it's when I first, you know, had a little bit of conversation in Korean.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
When I spoke to my boss, because she's always the one who's like, Nikki, learn Korean.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first had like a full sentence in Korean, that was a highlight for me, because I was like, oh yes, now we are in. We can even speak the language now. So... That's that was a highlight. And also moving from South Africa to Korea, knowing that I have a job that's just waiting for me, also that was a highlight.
Well, that's wonderful.
Because I was excited, even though, you know, nerves and all that, I'm moving to a different country, I don't know anyone, but I was really excited.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, highs and lows. And when the highs really come on, they really are highs, you know. And when the lows hit, they are lows. But, you know, just kind of, you know, shrug it off and just focus on the highs, right? I mean, because the highs do kind of make you feel better and stuff. And that is how we close this week's last installment. So, any last words to whoever is listening?
To whoever that's listening and... They're not sure if, you know, they should take these opportunities or even look into these opportunities. I would say that these jobs are for real. We are here. I mean, you're all the way in China and I'm in South Korea. And they should just do it. If they qualify, they should do it.
Right.
And just you should just pick up their green book and just leave. And they don't really have to, because at first I felt like you needed to have like millions and billions in order for you to move.
True.
So, yeah. So if you have your 11,000 rand and all that.
Or 12,000.
Because in Korea, some schools are willing to buy you a ticket to Korea. You know,
yes,
but you will have to buy yourself a ticket back to South Africa. Unlike us who bought ourselves tickets to Korea, then they will have to, you know, pay us for that. So if you, so if you feel like, you know, you want to do it, they should use us as examples that, you know, really possible. And they should go for it. They should just go for it. It's not easy, and there's never going to be a time where you would think about it and feel like, nah, this is easy. It's never. So they should just do it.
Nothing is ever that easy. Well, Nikki, thank you so much. Thank you so much for dropping by and for sitting with me and talking about all of this mess on a Sunday when you should be drinking. But thank you so much. Much appreciated. And yeah, let's keep the conversation going. Let's spread some good vibes, right? You agree, some good vibes. And live your life, take the plunge and get on the plane and move on to Korea. Well, and that just kind of sums it up for this week's installment of the Green Tea's Heart to Heart with Colvin. And as per usual, continue the conversation on our host sites, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you access your podcast from. I'm Colvin Green, and this has been Green Tea. Namaste. Thank you.